I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. It's called Enronitis, and Wall Street has it bad. The chills, tremors, and vertigo that come from not knowing just how many more bogus balance sheets are out there, or how, when, or where they're going to turn up. The world's biggest bankruptcy is doing a number on investor confidence, and suddenly every audit and piece of analysis seems suspect. As investor concern about accounting practices and finances mounts, more companies appear to be in dangerous water. Global Crossing went under last week. Tyco International and VeriSign are treading water. And now there are rumblings about troubles at the corporate giant GE. This was supposed to be the season of recovery. But a growing sense that something smells on the street has everyone holding their breath and investors large and small wondering who to trust. Connection listeners, has the fallout from Enron created a crisis of confidence in the markets? What kind of changes do you need to see before you're ready to return to the sunny side of Wall Street? Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. You can, of course, join us online at theconnection.org. My guests this hour are Mark Zandi. He is chief economist at economy.com, an economics consulting firm in Westchester, Pennsylvania. He's joining us from a studio in Philadelphia. And Jim Stanton is author of the Low Risk Newsletter and chief market analyst at First Georgetown Securities. He's joining us from a studio in Washington, D.C. Jim, I'll begin with you because you're in Washington. You're watching this determination to put Enron and all its executives and its past businesses practices on the rack. Is that the same kind of suspicion that you see investors turning to other companies now?
Yeah, I mean, you can see it in the markets day in and day out now. They've got Tyco has been on the ropes for about 2 weeks now. I think it hit a low yesterday of around 22 and bounced back a little bit. But all the analysts out there are running their, financial programs and running data through them to see if they can come up with the next Enron.
Because Mark, it's more than just one company's big mistake causing everyone to look at other companies to see if they're about to do it. I mean, in a way, we're talking about reviewing the very fundamentals of the way the market operates, aren't we?
Yeah, and I think it's a good thing. There's been a long-standing problem out there with the way the analysts have their relationship with their corporate clients and the way they deal with the public. You hardly ever see an analyst out there issue a sell recommendation on a stock. And 9 times out of 10, it's because the big brokerage firms and investment banks have relationships with these companies that they make money off of. And I think, although I feel my heart goes out to these Enron people and other companies affected by this. But I think in the long run, once this shakes out and we get some good legislation from Congress, the market will be a better place.
Mark, are you seeing it in the same way?
Yeah, I think that's about right. The market is very jittery, nervous. It's a difficult time. The economy is just making its way from recession into recovery. It's very fragile, and investors are nervous. So this is particularly bad timing.
Yeah, how do you make the distinction when you're making sense of the current numbers, Mark? How do you make a distinction between, bad times due to a recession, whatever stage we're at, and bad times due to this fear or suspicion that comes from the Enron collapse?
Well, it's not unusual to have these kinds of things happen in the middle or near the ends of recessions, only because the economy is under such stress. It exposes the mistakes that businesses and people made in the good times leading up to the recession. To some degree, what we're seeing today is not particularly unusual. It's commonplace to periods like these that we've experienced in the past.
I want to hear from both of you on the point that we're at right now, because if you want to look at it with a kind of a jaundiced eye, we're at a real critical point here in terms of whether or not investors will come back to the market. Jim, do you want to start on that?
I think this whole Enron debacle obviously it's had a negative effect on the market, but I think the all this Enron situation did was move the market in the direction it was already heading for. We had a big rally off the September lows. I think the Dow rallied at about 2,300 points, and in my opinion, the market got way ahead of itself. If you look at a trailing 12 months, the P/E ratios for the trailing 12 months, the S&P average got up to about a 40 times P/E.
Whoa, you're getting a little technical here. Put that in English for me. When you're
okay, basically the market since September 21st has gotten overvalued on a technical basis.
Right.
And what we're experiencing now is a pullback, and I think the market's next move will be determined by if this recession is over and what outlook we have for the next quarter or two.
Mark.
Well, I think the key concern that the Enron affair has created is it's a threat to one of sort of the underlying tenets behind the idea that we're in a new economy, that we're in an economy that is enjoying much stronger growth in productivity and therefore growth in our living standards. And that basic tenet is that we have good information, that we have more information, better information, and as such, we can do things more efficiently. The threat posed by what Enron has done and perhaps some other companies have done is that, in fact, that's not quite right, that we don't have as good an information as we think. And if that's true, then, you know, perhaps the economy's performance going out over the next 5-10 years might not be as strong as we had hoped for or had anticipated. So this is a fundamental threat to one of the more basic underpinnings of our economy.
And yesterday we heard from the National Association of Security Dealers and the New York Stock Exchange and the NASDAQ all proposing changes that would separate the researchers from the analysts, you know, not unlike the way that the auditing firms would separate their auditors from their consultants. Do you see these changes as overdue, as cosmetic? How do you view them?
I think they're very positive. If anything good happens as a result of that, of this this series of events, is just this, that corporate managers, senior managers will be chastened by what has happened and will be more forthcoming with better information, more information, that we'll get some increased regulatory oversight by all the parties involved, from the SEC to the accounting trade groups, and that we might even get some legislative relief. There's much discussion in Washington about pension plan reform and other things. So I think when it's all said and done, we'll come out of this in a better place. Obviously, it's a painful process, but a therapeutic one, and I think we are moving in the right direction. And hopefully this turns out to be one or a handful of rogue companies, and this is not an endemic widespread problem in corporate America, at least not to the degree that we're seeing in the case of Enron. And I think that's probably the case. And if it is, then I think we'll come out of this in a better way.
Jim Stanton, assume for the sake of this question that I'm not a day trader actually buying and selling stocks on my computer, but I'm one of the many investors who simply has money in a mutual fund. When we talk about the kinds of fundamental changes that are being made in the marketplace, are those the sorts of changes that should give me the assurance that the money I put into my 401k or the money I put into a mutual fund is going to be safer?
Yes, I definitely agree. What has to come out of this is some good or drastic changes in the way these analysts and the accountants operate. The market, we went through years ago, we went through the Penn Central bankruptcy, and, you know, there were changes called for then. There were a few small ones made. Then we go through the S&L crisis, you know, and everyone wants changes at that point, but it seems to die down. And I think what has to happen this time is some changes have to be made in order for this not to happen again.
But are those the changes that are being discussed? That's what I'm trying to get at. Should I be confident that they're actually really going to make those changes this time?
I don't know. I know all these it's a little premature to say what's going to come out of this because, mm-hmm. you know, the investigations and why things happen are still going on. But only time will tell.
Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. We're going to Greensboro, North Carolina, and John's joining us. Hi, John.
Good morning.
Thanks for calling.
Certainly. I love your show, by the way. I just recently retired last year from a high-tech company that lost about 85 or 90% of the value of its stock over the last year and a half, and not necessarily from faulty accounting practices. And what I wanted to get at was, along with changing some of the accounting practices, I think there needs to be a change in the philosophy in corporate America away from the need to do everything to drive the value of the stock in the next quarter's report. There's a lot of decisions that are made to prop up short-term valuation of stock that in the long term hurt the company's financial viability. I saw it personally, and I've seen it in a lot of other companies that were in the same market as us. In other words, do things to recognize revenue for a quarter, and let's not worry about what implications that has a year from now down the road.
Trouble is that high stock value is the sexy part, though, isn't it, John? I mean, that's what people are chasing.
You know, it is or it isn't. I guess it depends on whether you're an investor that's looking to do day trading or to make your profit in six months or 3 months, or whether you're looking to put a 401k out there for retirement in 15 years. Clearly, from my point of view, I want stocks that I know are going to be here and have some value in 10 years, and I'm not worried as much about making a profit next week or next month. I'm not in and out of the market, and I don't think a lot of people are. And I think that's the issue, is a lot of corporate America these days are making decisions based on how quickly they can prop their stock prices up quarter by quarter, and they're making bad decisions to do that.
So, Mark Zandi, when people give advice to folks like John, based on wanting something from the long term, will that be now based on the changes that are coming in, that the analysis will somehow be slightly less tainted, or will it be simply people giving that sort of advice because that's what the market wants, that's what the investors want?
Well, it's some of both. I mean, I do think the changes that are being discussed and that probably will be implemented with regard to the accounting firms and in terms of the equity analysts and even in terms of the reporting of the companies themselves will result in the better reporting of more information that will make it easier for investors to judge just how well these companies are doing, not only in the next quarter but over the longer run. So I think we are moving in the right direction. I think investors ultimately we'll find that they will have better information to make better investments.
Connection listeners, better reporting, a little bit more information. Is that what it will take to get you interested once again in the stock market, to give you a little bit of confidence that the money you have invested there for your pension will be there when you retire? John from Greensboro, thanks a lot for your call. We're back with more calls at 1-800-423-8255 on The Connection from National Public Radio. Listening to The Connection on National Public Radio. And Connection listeners, if we were doing a program about investments 20 years ago, we'd be talking about a very small portion of the population. But one of the things that has changed is through pension plans, 401ks. Many, many more people are involved in the market. You're involved in the market, perhaps in places that you don't even know you're in the market. So when we talk about changes on Wall Street, we're talking about effects that could have wide-ranging implications for all of us. Mark Zandi is with us. He's chief economist at economy.com. That's an economics consulting firm in Westchester, Pennsylvania. Jim Stanton is author of a low-risk newsletter and chief market analyst at First Georgetown Securities. And specifically, we're talking about what the effect of the Enron chill is on on the current market. Jim Stanton, this nervousness that exists today on Wall Street, do you look at it as something serious enough to actually endanger the recovery, something that could prolong the recession?
Yes, I think it can. A lot depends on if any other companies come to the forefront with problems. I mean, we said Tyco stock has dropped 40%. And if this continues where these analysts are finding other problems, it could drag the market down for a while longer.
So what are you telling people?
At this point, I've got my clients pretty much sitting in the money market fund. I think the market is in the process of testing the September lows. Whether the market will go down and take those lows out is yet to be determined. And until I see the playing field looking safer out there, I'm content to sit in money markets for now.
Mark Zandi, what's your advice?
Well, I agree and disagree with Frank. I agree that
with Jim.
With Jim, that this could be a key risk to the recovery, the incipient recovery, particularly if it does take down the equity market, the stock market, a whole nother notch. There are very strong links between the stock market and the real economy through the ability of businesses to invest, to the wealth of consumers, to even the tax revenues of government. So it's very important, and it is a risk. And if it is a wider spread problem than the handful of companies that have really been engulfed in this, then that is a key threat to the recovery that seems just to be about underway. Where
you said
I disagree.
It could be. Oh, sorry, I'll let you finish because I want to just question one other thing. But go ahead, Mark.
Sure. I disagree with Frank in the sense that
Jim.
I'm sorry. I don't know. I have Frank on the mind here. I'm not sure. You know, it was the last phone call I made before I walked in the studio. So,
no problem.
Sorry, Jim. I apologize. But I do disagree with Jim about what advice to give to investors, particularly individual investors. Individual investors have to have an eye to the long run. You shouldn't be in the equity market at all if your horizon is anything less than a few years. And if it is more than a few years, then you should be invested in the equity market. You shouldn't be too worried about these ups and downs because they'll iron themselves out. And this economy is fundamentally very strong. And ultimately, stocks will begin to appreciate in value and provide much higher returns than you're going to get on almost any other asset that you can invest in. Now, of course, if you're an institutional investor and you're judged on your returns quarter by quarter, month to month, then that's perhaps a different issue. But for the average person out there, for the average investor, I would look completely through what's happening and have an eye to the long run, to my retirement, perhaps to the funding of my child's college education.
Okay. Our number is 1-800-423-8255 to Fairfield, Iowa. Joan is joining us. Hi, Joan.
Hi, I'm an investment advisor, and I'm completely thrilled that this finally happened. A lot of us have been waiting for the shoe to drop, have felt that we couldn't trust the reports we were reading, and I feel that this is going to cause the accounting business to clean up a little bit.
When you talk about the shoe dropping, do you mean Enron's bankruptcy or the effects of that and the changes that we're looking at now?
Both. Both the Enron situation, which is causing a lot of scrutiny of the accounting firms, but also the fact that investors are kind of a little slow to drive up the stock prices, even though we're getting some good economic news. The stocks were very overpriced before the market went down, and they started getting overpriced again toward the end of the year. They were just going up on a hope and a song, and the PEs were creeping up without the earnings going up much to back it up. And I think it's going to prevent us from having another overblown market.
Joan, I'm going to thank you for your call because we're starting to lose you on the cell phone.
Okay.
Thanks for calling.
All righty.
Jim, is there any danger that the review that we're looking at, Mark was talking about, you know, a small number of companies that are getting this second look, if that expands, is there any danger that this retrospective will be the medicine that kills the patient?
It's possible. Out of all the public companies out there, let's pick a number, say 10,000. Whatever it is, there's probably a small percentage of those that do have some creative accounting on their books. But even a small percentage is a fairly large number of companies. And, you know, if we start hearing about, you know, companies having problems like one a week, you know, you might get a dramatic effect in the market and, you know, it'll have to rebuild from lower levels.
1-800-423-8255 to Hilton Head, South Carolina. Beck's joining us now. Hi, Beck.
Hi. Yes, I had a quick comment to make on the discussion. A lot of people, investors like myself, that have money in what we consider long-term investments, the biggest thing that concerns us is primarily the fact that the investors that we're listening to and that these guys are talking about getting back into the market are you know, the day traders. We think that a lot of times that good solid stocks, whether it's, you know, utilities or conservative mutual funds, the money's being drawn away from those from investors that are tantalized by trying to make the quick returns.
Doesn't that make them a better value for you, though, Beck?
Not necessarily. I mean, they make them a better value as far as if you're buying stocks and, you know, continuing to kind of put your money into a more conservative fund or a stock that's kind of fallen out of favor with everyone else. In other words, these people, instead of trying to get a 10 to 15% return like it is traditional in the stock market, they're trying to make those kinds of, you know, big returns in 2 or 3 weeks or 2 or 3 months. And consequently, the stocks that people would have thought were good investments 5 years ago aren't good investments at this point.
Mark Zandi, the idea that the era of the dot-coms taught some people to expect 30 and 40% returns, I think, you know, to just draw from what Beck's put on the table here, do those people playing in the market make it more difficult, somehow foul things up for the investors who are in there for the long term?
I don't think for the long run. I think, you know, ultimately in the long run, economic value will be determined and assessed properly, and investors will get their due results. But I do think he has a point in that the euphoria, the wild euphoria, the sort of bubble mania that existed back around Y2K has resulted to some degree to the problems we're experiencing right now, in the sense that if you go back to that period, company management was rewarded for growth at all costs. And the way to achieve that was through a creative accounting, tax avoidance.
Pumping up the stock price, yeah.
Exactly. And it resulted in some of the things that we're paying a price for today. So to some degree, what happened back then, that euphoria driven at least symbolically by the dot-com investing and the margin debt and so forth and so on, is led to what's happened today. But again, I think you see it's being ironed out. I mean, things got out of hand, wild euphoria back 2-3 years ago, and now we have dark pessimism today. The reality is somewhere in between, and if you're a longer-term investor with a 5 or 10 year horizon, you're going to come out okay. You're going to get the returns that you should expect to get.
All right, Beck, thanks for your call. We're going to Cambridge now. Adam's joining us. Hi, Adam.
Hi, good afternoon. Can you hear me?
Yeah, hear you fine. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think getting back to the line, to the point that you were just making is that I think the public is often given the sense that their expectations should be much, much higher in order to lure them into the market. I mean, people don't have many places to put their money now, so they are being drawn to the market. But the sense is, what's the sense of Wall Street's responsibility to make sure that people are given a true sense as to what the success of their, you know, of their investments will be, and that will keep them as long-term investors? And I think that's in the long-term interest of Wall Street itself.
Adam, let me just pick up, if I can, on one of the points that you raised, because I want a little clarification. It's an interesting one that you said just in passing that there are fewer places for investors to go. Is that saying that, you know, if you want to tax shelter money, if you want to put money away for the pension, that it ends up in a 401k, that it ends up in the stock market, even though you might not really feel 100% comfortable with that?
Absolutely. I mean, I've been an investor since 1975. And the man that I work with is always saying to me, look, people are going to be putting more money in the market because there's no place else to go. And I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing that people don't have many choices of places to go, but I think that there's a sense of responsibility, I think, of the brokers and of Wall Street to not feed the successiveness of greed of people. And I think that goes back to the pressures that were on Enron itself and their executives, feeding expectations that are just unrealistic because people get so greedy.
Now, so some of what you're talking about is the responsibility of the investor to be able to see past the snake oil salesman.
Absolutely. But I believe that most people, I trust most people are smart, but I'm not really good with money and investing. I trust other people. I'm not an investment broker. I think most people don't understand the complexities of the market, and they are trusting these vehicles and trusting the people who are running them. And not to say that people should be going into it blindly, but I think the reality is most people don't understand the way that system works. And we want to move away from the government controlling, bank rates and what people can get on the return of their investment. We want to return it to the public to control it. But it's with sort of the chaotic feeding frenzy that happened, in the mid to late 80s. And again, in the 90s, and I think if we look back every so often, we see this. And I guess my question is, if the guys on Wall Street, the men and women on Wall Street, are so committed to this system, why don't they hold themselves a little bit more accountable in terms of not getting – because I think they're part of the problem as to why people are get into this feeding frenzy.
Let's ask Jim Stanton on that.
I think the average investor out there – if you look at the market over the long term, the last 50, 60 years, the market stock prices have gone up. The excesses of the late 90s happened from time to time. And, my long-term philosophy is if you've got a horizon of 10 years or more, no matter what the market does, is that you dollar cost average into stocks on a regular basis, whether it be monthly, quarterly, or annually. And in the long run, historically, you're fine. The responsibility of Wall Street, I think it's more people's greed than Wall Street going out, pushing stocks on people. I mean, people see these returns that other people are making in the market, and it's sort of like a lemming effect, and that's what happened in 1999 and early 2000.
But Adam's question is directed to people like you, Jim, who give people advice on what to do with their money, and in part what he's saying is there's not a lot of trust there in that type of advice right now. How do you reestablish that? How do you regain the confidence of investors?
Personally, my clients know me very well and have been with me a long time. And
this wasn't a personal attack on you. I'm speaking more broadly.
But I've been in the markets for 20 years, and when the NASDAQ was up 90% in 1999, at least from being around the markets, I knew that, we were basically in the tulip craze. And it was, I told most of my clients that they should get out of the market in late 99 and early 2000. And I can only speak from, personal experience. But when prices go crazy like that, and Yahoo is worth more than Citicorp and GM and Ford combined, something's wrong. And I think it's the duty of the analysts of the big investment houses to let people know. And you didn't hear any of that. You heard analysts saying that these dot-com companies were going to go to $1,000 a share. And to me, that was criminal.
But is that going to change, or is it always going to be up to the buyer to beware?
I think, when all is said and done, the buyer has to be aware, and they have to hook themselves up with a reputable financial advisor.
Adam, just to close out on your expectations and how you will look at the market in the months and the years ahead, what Jim is speaking about is that is the long-term relationship and the trust that is built up between, you know, people over time.
You know, but I think, can I just throw one thing in here?
Yeah.
That, you know, I work with people in the hotel business, and, you know, these are people who don't make a lot of money. And, you know, in September and October and November, they were still coming to me and wanting to open up a 401k. I mean, so I don't think you've lost the average Joe in terms of investing in the market in mutual funds and in 401ks. They're there. And I don't think the gym is at all, you know, leading people the wrong way. I think it comes down to, again, you know, what are the pressures on Merrill Lynch? What are the pressures on the big companies to make big bucks and to be successful financially? Because they push the smaller people down there who are making the phone calls, who are doing the research, who are to give better numbers, to give a better idea, and there's smart guys like Jim out there who have a lot of experience who are able to manage that to his clients. But there are a lot of people out there who you know, who are farther down the rung, who are not doing that, and I hold the investment houses somewhat accountable in terms of pushing the envelope to make more money, to be the first, to be the best. And obviously, it's the success of our economy in a way, but we're seeing now a very fundamental way as to how it can get out of control so that the foundation shakes in a way where you're not going to lose people's interest, but you're going to have people panicking.
And the people giving the advice should take a cold shower is basically what you're saying.
Well, you know, Jim's giving good advice, but...
I'm just saying not to get caught up in the hype.
Absolutely. And,
right.
And there's a lot of pressure when you go out to dinner and you hear your friends are making a ton of money.
Yeah, I'm remortgaging my house and putting it all into this stock, and I'm going to be retired next year.
And really, there's no humility in it, just like we're seeing with these Enron guys. There's no humility into making a mistake. Nobody wants to admit it.
All right, Adam, thanks a lot for your call. Connection listeners, 1-800-423-8255. We're talking about the Enron effect on the markets and whether or not that has shaken your confidence in the ability of your 401k or your pension plan to hold its value over time. Do you like the advice that you're getting right now? Do you trust the advice that you're getting right now? You're listening to The Connection on NPR.
One, two.
Listening to The Connection on National Public Radio. My name's Dick Gordon, and we're talking about the effects of the Enron bankruptcy on investor confidence in Wall Street and the sort of spill-on effect of the suspicion that investors have. There was a story yesterday of Bernard Ebbers, the president and chief executive officer of WorldCom, on a conference call trying to explain away the fact that he had borrowed some $340 million from the company and was planning on paying it back, and talking about fourth quarter profits being down and revenue down, and his sharp rebuke to people asking questions about it was, "To question my company's viability is utter nonsense. I highly recommend everyone step back and focus on reality rather than the fear factor." This story just in, the FBI is launching an investigation into the accounting procedures at Global Crossing, another company which fell after the beginning of the year, in part because of the scrutiny on the high debt that it was carrying. We're talking about whether or not those sorts of stories are simply going to keep on keeping the market bumping along without people interested in getting back in. My guests are Jim Stanton, chief market analyst at First Georgetown Securities and author of the Low Risk Newsletter, Mark Zandi's chief economist at economy.com. And Mark Zandi, we watch what happens with Enron. Every day there's another leak or another story coming out saying they should have known this, they should have done that. Is that also something about that similar to what's plaguing the markets now, that there's always now another company in the news under suspicion, keeping investors wary?
Yeah, I think that's it. It's the uncertainty. And when investors are uncertain, they don't know what the risks are that they face, and they, I guess the word is, disengaged. They pull back. They are just obviously less interested in buying a security like a stock. So it's that uncertainty that's the problem right now. And until that clears up a little bit and people feel a bit more comfortable, I think the stock market will be fragile.
All right. Connection listeners, you know our number, 1-800-423-8255. We're going to Stoughton, Mass., and Arthur's joining us. Hi, Arthur.
Hi. Let me
reason why I'm calling is I wanted to talk about some other people who are responsible for Enron, and those are the owners, the stockholders. You see, every year, corporations, not only Enron, all corporations, send out these little notices to all the stockholders, and most of them just throw them away.
This is the annual meeting you're talking about.
No. This is a little notice which talks about, usually there's three or four questions on it. One of them refers to picking the board of directors. And most stockholders don't know anything about that, so they agree. That's one question. The second question usually deals with something like changes in the corporate law, the corporate logs, or issuing stock, and that kind of stuff. And people don't know much about that, so they, by this point, they usually throw it away. But the last question, that's the important one. And the question usually reads something like, the board of directors recommends the reappointment of ABC Audit Company for another year. And you have the options of saying yes or no. And everyone always says yes, or they throw it away, and it defaults to yes. And if people were to say no and force corporations to get new auditors every year, every 2 years, every 3 years, this thing with the auditors getting in bed with the companies could not happen.
You mean breaking that cozy relationship that builds over time?
That's the problem. I've worked with in internal audits and with companies, and you never see internal auditors around. Everything is done by the corporations alone. There has to be much more verification. This is a gross problem that has happened. There was no verification of their financial statements, and that's what led to this entire problem. If they had done their job from the beginning, Enron would still be viable today.
Mark Zandi, Arthur's bringing us back to one of the fundamental questions at the heart of the Enron issue, and saying that one relationship that exists between the corporation and the auditor, if that could be in some way altered or fixed to give investors confidence, it would make a big difference. Your thoughts on that?
I think it would help. One of the proposals that's being considered is to split apart accounting firms. Right now they provide both audit advice and consulting advice. And there's a seeming conflict there. I mean, if you're giving advice to senior management about how to operate their company and then you're turning around and auditing how they do and what they're doing, that doesn't seem quite kosher. And so there's an effort through the regulatory process to split those accounting firms into two pieces, and either literally splitting them apart or putting some type of financial Chinese wall between them. And some of the accounting firms are actually acting upon that now and spinning off their consulting activities. I think that's very propitious step, a very positive step, and I think that's the best thing that'll come out of this. I'm not so sure that inducing auditors to sort of revolve every couple of years, you know, give up their accounts is the best thing, because you know, auditors are very it takes a long time to learn how businesses function, very complicated businesses function. And if you make auditors move or leave every year or two or three, I think there's as much cost there as there is benefit.
Jim Stanton, talk about the other thing that Arthur raised, though, that fact that investors should take more control of you know, what it is that they can alter at the firm. I get these mailings from a mutual fund that I own 0.000001% of, saying, would I like to, you know, go to the annual meeting? Would I like to make this recommendation for change? And I throw it out because I just simply assume that there is nothing that I can do, or I've never thought about it before. But what about, you know, being a little more proactive?
Well, I think you have to realize that any company out there, that any big company, a major part of the public float of the stock is owned by institutions, and the mutual funds, and they take a very active role in who's sitting on the board of directors. For individual investors, and their whole reason for doing that is money. They want the best people at the helm for their investments, and they're a lot smarter from company to company than the individual investor or you or I. So I have to put my trust in the people that have a huge stake in the company. And I don't know what the individual investor can do you know, except to vote. But does one vote count? Well, yeah, it will if a lot of people do that.
Right. 1-800-423-8255. Arthur, thanks for your call. We're going to Greensboro, North Carolina. Albertina's joining us. Hi there.
Okay. Good morning. I'm a state employee, and I can truly say that the Enron debacle has just shaken the fear base for the common man. My problem is that we did not, and we still do not have a lot of information about the stock market. It's limited. But during the 90s, during the economic recovery, we invested in 401k plans, and because we know Social Security will not be adequate for baby boomers. Then the recession, 9/11, Enron, and if you're in North Carolina, Burlington Industries, and so forth, and et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And to hear other things like Juan Williams talking about the journalists on the Enron payroll that were speech makers, writers, and some journalists were economic journalists who seems to be a conflict in interest. So we do not know what to believe. We depend upon the media to do investigative reporting and to give us the truth, and of course the stocks are listed in the paper and et cetera, but I am very fearful about where to go. And I don't want to see them in jail, but I would like to see a lot of the people liquidate all their assets and pay whatever monies that they can to the stockholders.
You're talking about getting the Enron people who made a lot of money to give that money back to the employees.
That's right. I don't think jail is an appropriate sentence, and we really don't want that. Those people want their money, and I had relatives with Enron who had thousands, and then when they got their next statement, they had $0, and one is 65, and actually he had to go to the hospital.
What, Albertina, what about your own pension, 401k? Are you able to keep track of it?
Yes, I'm able to keep track of it, but I like the letters you're talking about. When I get them, I don't know those people. You know, they send me a list of who's on the board, but they don't tell me who they are, where they went to school, you know, what they've accomplished. And, you know, I don't know. It's like they're faces without a lot of, a lot of information about them. So I'm just trusting them on blind faith, and I'm trusting them to be honest people, and I did lose money. And that.
And so if you could ask for one thing to change, mm-hmm. would it be to change the system in a way that the Enrons wouldn't happen?
Well, we want more accountability and more information. And I certainly would not invest my Social Security check into the stock market or any private industry after what Enron has done, and look like what GE and Tyco and everybody else is doing too. It's just that I think it's the tip of the iceberg instead of just being an isolated case.
Jim Stanton, are we at a stage, is Wall Street at a stage where there will be more accountability to give some confidence to people like Albertina?
I think there has to be. The brokerage business is a huge multi-billion-dollar business, and I think they realize that they have to get their house in order to get the confidence of the investor back.
And Mark?
I think a healthy skepticism, cynicism is a positive thing. We do need to make some changes. But I think it's also important not to be overwhelmed by fear. I mean, fundamentally, this system works, and it works very, very well. We have a very efficient financial system. We have lots of good information. We have lots of parties looking at what these companies are telling us. And this economy has done fabulously. I mean, we've been through a recession, but it's been the mildest in our post-World War II history. The unemployment rate has risen, but it's still very low. It's 5.6%. You can still get a fixed-rate mortgage for 7%. I mean, this economy is fundamentally very strong, and we're doing quite well. And I think it's important not to get wrapped up too much in fear. I mean, the pessimism is we've got to be careful and not let this pessimism overrun us, because fundamentally, we're still in a pretty good place.
Okay. Albertina, thanks for your call. Going to Ashby, Massachusetts. Eric's joining us now. Hi, Eric.
Hello.
Hi, Eric. Go ahead.
Hi. My question was this. It seems to me that the allegations against Enron are that they created these subsidiaries to bury their losses. And it seems to me that on the annual reports, all these subsidiaries should be included. And I don't understand how they can bury these losses if they're all included on one large annual report.
Straightforward question. Mark Zandi, as we talk about changing the relationship between the people who do the auditing and the corporation, will there also be a change in the way that the paperwork makes these sorts of things easier to understand?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's also important, although it hasn't been proven yet in a legal sense, it seems as if there's some fraud here as well. I mean, there might be things that are going on fraudulently, and somebody and some people may ultimately end up in jail. So, we it may be very much the case that that's happened. But abstracting from that, I think there are some changes that can be implemented. And in fact, one of the very important congressmen that is involved in this process in Washington stated that he didn't realize that if a company sets up a partnership and gets outside investors to pony up 3% of the capital, then the company doesn't need to report that as part of their own reporting. And that's exactly what Enron did. And I think that's something that will change. So we're learning from this. Policymakers are learning from this. Changes will happen. But it's also important to realize that, at least in the case of Enron, it may very well turn out to be that there was downright fraud here.
Okay, Eric, thanks for your call. Jim Stanton, look ahead for us a bit, if you would, because I know that the business lives on dates, end of this quarter and end of the month, and the measures that you'll be looking for to see whether or not the investor confidence is turning. What do you look for ahead?
What I'm looking for is a recovery here. Assuming that there's no other big icebergs out there like the Enron situation. But I don't think we're going to have a robust recovery. I think the market may have some more work to do on the downside. But I would use the weakness in the markets to add to any long-term portfolios with, blue-chip companies. And in the long run, you're going to be fine.
Mark, briefly.
Yeah, I think if there are no more disasters like Enron, and my gut tells me that there's not, then I think this market's going to find its footing pretty quickly. The economy's making its way back, and a year from now, we're going to be in a much better place.
Thanks to both of you for being with me.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Jim Stanton, Chief Market Analyst at First Georgetown Securities, author of The Low Risk Newsletter. Mark Zandi is Chief Economist at Economy.com. It's a consulting firm in Westchester, Pennsylvania. Our program is produced by Sean Carberry, Sarah Field, Kelly Jones, Allison McAdam, Lindsay Miller, Tara Murphy, and Christina Rousseau. Our senior producer is Graham Smith. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.